stand by. We're about to begin. Good day, everyone. Welcome, and thank you for joining us for today's IBM teleconference, Exchanging Business Data and Transactions with WebSphere MQ for ZOS. Today's teleconference will last approximately 60 minutes and will include a live question and answer session. In this teleconference, learn how WebSphere MQ on ZOS can help you eliminate risks to security and compliance while giving you the flexibility to make changes as you need them and make them quickly. The speaker for today's teleconference is Ben Mann, WebSphere MQ Product Manager. At this time, I would like to hand it over to our speaker, Ben Mann. Please go ahead.
Thank you very much, and welcome to this webcast looking at exchanging business data and transactions with WebSphere MQ for ZOS. Moving to the first chart, entitled Challenge 1, this chart really captures the problems that many of our customers and many organizations are facing today. The result of many years of adding and subtracting IT components to their solutions to meet their changing needs often becomes just one big convoluted mess. And you can see the diagram that we affectionately call the hairball chart shows one customer's actual application architecture. And what you can see here are all the applications and the service components that they encompass within just one single enterprise. As a result of this kind of hairball or this rat's nest of integration, companies are experiencing ever-increasing application maintenance costs. And as you can see from the research there, it shows that the lion's share of most IT budgets goes to maintaining what they already have rather than to new investments. But really, why does it have to be that way? Well, really, many of those application components within this architecture are connected in a very fragile way. Each time an application needs to be removed or modified in some way, all the different couplings to existing applications need to be changed as well. They're very brittle, so they're inflexible to change. There is also often a limited ability to trace the data that's moving between these different applications and to manage and control changes that happen and understand the impact of one change to an application to the rest of the community of applications. But also, the business logic within those apps, as well as the logic on how to connect those applications, are often become intertwined. The processes, the connectivity logic, and the application data are all connected together and hard-coded into the applications themselves. And the result is that it often becomes very expensive, very risky, and it requires skills that perhaps have become outdated, that may be scarce to find, to change or add assets to this particular infrastructure. So many customers are facing this particular challenge today. Let's move on to slide 3 and understand why this really is a challenge. There's a mantra that really says that at one level, IT systems and computers are pretty dumb. You have to tell them what to do. And in particular, thinking about that problem of how we connect all those different systems together in a flexible way, there are many, many things that you have to overcome, technical challenges in connecting things together. So, for example, how do you move data across different systems and devices that run different kind of hardware, different kind of software and operating systems that haven't been designed to interconnect? Also, how do you overcome failures in an IT network when data is being moved around and data doesn't arrive where it should do or doesn't arrive in a certain amount of time? What do you do if you're trying to deliver information from one application to another and that application is either not online, it's busy processing something else, it's not available at that time? What happens to that piece of data? Is it lost? Do you have to retry again? What is the logic that overcomes that problem? How do you ensure that when you transmit data, you can ensure that the integrity of that data remains intact and also recover data that gets lost and needs to be retransmitted? Also, how do you make the connections between all these different infrastructures and architectures secure? What happens if you have a transaction that may take many different steps across the IT infrastructure? And how do you handle situations where perhaps data is sent more than once? It might be a customer order that gets sent multiple number of times. How do you spot that situation and deal with it? Is there a way that you can apply different qualities of service to information that's being delivered? As an analogy, think about the postal service that you have and how you can send items, perhaps an overnight delivery or before a certain period of time in the day, maybe recorded or registered post so that you know that something has definitely arrived. How do you have those kind of qualities of service within your infrastructure and use the right one for the right kind of data? Many more technical issues around scalability, how you manage sessions, how you deal with different data formats, and the list goes on. There are many different challenges involved in connecting these things together. As if that wasn't enough, moving to slide four, there is another challenge that many organizations are facing today. And it's in the shape of legislation and regulations, particularly regulatory compliance obligations that companies now are being faced with. Many of these obligations are being driven by the requirement for companies to show that they can produce up-to-date and accurate financial reports. You may have heard of initiatives like Sarbanes-Oxley or SOX that affects many companies in the United States and those that are listed on the stock exchange. But there are many different kinds of regulatory compliance across different industries and different geographies. In Europe, the MiFIDs is a compliance that's hitting a lot of companies in Europe and spreading across from many different industries and geographies. And then there are many other compliance obligations that are industry-specific, like HIPAA, for example, which affects the healthcare industry. In many cases, it's all about ensuring that sensitive data, and often especially financial data, hasn't been tampered with, and that the reports generated from this data can be trustworthy. Because at the end of the day, what most of these regulatory compliance obligations require is that the chief financial officer and the CEO sign personally, that they personally attest to the accuracy and validity of financial reports. Now, the question is, can the CEO and CFO be in a position to do that if there's any doubt whether data that represents business transactions flowing through the enterprise has been lost, duplicated, corrupted, partially received? Because the net result of that, of course, will be that financial information based on that transaction data is unlikely to be accurate, and it will be very difficult to demonstrate that it is accurate. So really what companies are looking for is, how do I get a complete audit trail of all the data being exchanged between my IT systems? How can I ensure that data doesn't get lost, that it hasn't been tampered with? How can I prove that those applications, those IT systems, are always reconciled, that their integrity is always preserved? The bottom line is that companies recognize this isn't just a problem for the CEO and the chief financial officer. This is a problem that the CIO and the IT department can help solve. And they can help solve it by ensuring that data being moved around the organization is taken care of. Chart 5 talks about the introduction of SOA, service-oriented architecture, the idea that you can take the IT components within your infrastructure, turn them into services, that is, repeatable tasks, reusable tasks, and connect them together into a very flexible architectural style, an SOA. Clearly, an SOA has many roles to play in making IT systems more flexible, more resilient to change, and can play a role in addressing those two challenges we just looked at. But moving on to the next chart, slide 6, it really shows that for many companies, SOA also poses a challenge in and of itself. And often many customers approach SOA by thinking, well, I want to get there. I understand this is a journey I want to be on. And I want to reach the point of having my IT systems connected as loosely coupled services. But where do I begin? What is the first IT project that I should do in SOA that's going to give me a very low risk, high reward solution so that we can build on that success and take my first SOA project and progressively move it along to get more and more benefits from having a service-oriented architecture? I think it's important to remember that SOA isn't just about building new assets and making them reusable and flexibly connected. It's also about taking the assets you already have today and leveraging those within a service-oriented architecture. So therein again is another challenge. How do I take the latest and greatest and best new technologies and new paradigms and also connect those to the technologies and the systems that I have today so that I can use all of these things together? So again, another challenge being faced by organizations. Moving on to the next chart, how do you address those challenges today? Perhaps you feel you haven't begun, or perhaps you're way into addressing these problems. Many companies today approach these in a variety of ways. And the selection of these things depends on their availability, people's experiences and skills with these technologies. People may be building connections between applications using sockets programming, like Berkeley Sockets, for example. They may be leveraging the File Transfer Protocol, or FTP, or some suite that uses FTP as a mechanism for moving data around. There may be things like remote procedure calls, many different styles of using remote procedure calls to connect things together, or maybe message-oriented middleware, maybe the approach that you're using today. Fundamentally, whatever you're doing, you can boil it down into three different options. You can either continue to program connectivity logic into each application. You can build your own middleware, your own way of connecting things together, perhaps leveraging some of these technologies. Or you can acquire middleware that will help do this for you. So let's look at the business impact of that particular choice. Slide 8 presents some very interesting findings from a UK-based analyst company called Software Strategies, and they did a very extensive survey of a number of large organizations across many industries. And they were very interested in looking at the different ways that companies had approached this problem of connecting things together and trying to establish the relative cost of this, in other words, the drain or the burden, if you will, on the IT department for each of these alternatives. The interesting findings that they've proven here is that by developing this yourself, by using pure coding techniques, and particularly by building that logic into applications, is going to yield the highest cost, both in terms of developing the solution in the first place, but also the ongoing maintenance. And what they've really shown is that by using integration software, you can cut those costs by 2 to 4 times, both for the development, but also for the ongoing maintenance that often prevents you from building new assets, new applications, and delivering new services. And clearly, as you integrate more applications, you'll be able to increase those savings. So let's look at more about why that's the case. What is behind these savings, this claim that integration software can save money as opposed to coding this solution yourself? Well, let's start by proposing on the next chart a connectivity infrastructure that would be ideal to have in an organization. And this connectivity infrastructure is embodied in the term ESB, or Enterprise Service Bus, and you can see one in the diagram depicted here. What we're really saying is that what organizations need is some distributed, federated architecture, some connectivity layer, if you will, that offers the services required to connect any kind of things together that you need. The ability, for example, to connect various hardware platforms, operating systems, devices that you might have, sensors, RFID, mobile phones, PDAs, all of those devices that it would need to be able to handle. From a technology standpoint, being able to integrate different programming languages and different programming environments. In particular, the ability to marry together the Java programming style and the .NET programming style. But also, to be able to connect to those investments that you may have coded in COBOL, for example. Also, this connectivity infrastructure would need to be able to understand various data formats, both industry-specific data formats, technology-specific formats, and the various flavors of XML that might be used, and legacy standards that you also like to be using as well. In addition, this ESB, this connectivity layer, would need to understand various ways of programming. Do I want to send information immediately? Do I want to send it simultaneously? Do I want to send events instead of messages? And what kind of delivery modes do I want to have? What kind of patterns, if you will, of interacting do I want to provide? And clearly, to meet the challenge of being able to overcome these problems that we've seen of regulatory compliance, of flexible integration, and of SOA, we would need to overcome all of these things. We would need a connectivity infrastructure that could deal with virtually anything. Now, clearly, deploying an enterprise service bus right across the organization to handle all of those things can be a daunting task. It's wide-ranging. It involves many different technologies, many different IT departments coming together. Really, what you want to be able to do is to take a series of straightforward, simple steps towards this end goal of having this ubiquitous connectivity infrastructure. So on the next chart, let's consider the role that messaging can play as having a first step towards this idea of an enterprise service bus. So on this chart, we're talking about the role that the product Web3MQ can have in being your first step to SOA. So right now at step zero, where you are likely today, you may have an application where the logic for how that application connects to the outside world, the logic for how it mediates or exchanges data with other applications, and also perhaps the logic that transforms incoming data into a format it understands, and also transforms outgoing data into formats that other applications can understand, may also be buried deep within that application. So really what we're talking about is the ability to externalize, to unburden the application of having to understand that connectivity, how to connect to applications and which applications it should connect to. And so that's step one, this idea that using a messaging backbone to handle connectivity unburdens the application, removes the need for it to have buried deep within itself the understanding of how to network, how to communicate, how to talk, how to exchange data, and also which applications it talks to. Now, clearly, there's a lot of benefits to just that first single step where WebSphereMQ is involved, our messaging backbone. And we're going to look throughout this presentation in some detail at some of those particular benefits. But obviously, that is just a first step. And having deployed a messaging backbone and reaped those benefits, you can go on and unburden the application of the mediation logic. And then even further, you can unburden it from its transformation logic so that the application itself becomes truly service-oriented. It connects to other services. It has no knowledge of where those services are, of what languages those services are developed in, because it no longer matters. The application itself can carry out its business logic, confident that the infrastructure itself, the enterprise service bus, will take care of those characteristics, of those services that the application needs. And the great power involved there is that if those services need to be changed, if the application needs to connect to other systems that it doesn't understand, that it hasn't been designed to work with, the ESB will take care of that. There's no need to go into that application and change it and modify it, because the ESB is the place where all of this can be stored and can be changed flexibly. So let's focus and examine this idea of the application connectivity, this first step towards SOA, and look in more detail at WebSphereMQ, and in particular, the value that it brings to customers who have the SystemZ platform. So the next chart introduces WebSphereMQ for ZOS. WebSphereMQ for ZOS has been built from the ground up on Z-Series. That is, it's been built and engineered natively to support the ZOS platform. And the reason for that is that what we want to be able to do is to exploit the capabilities of the SystemZ environment. We want to be able to exploit many of the security, many of the availability characteristics that it has and its clustering capability. And we want to provide a very tight integration with your existing assets on SystemZ, for example, Kix and IMS. So we're going to look at its characteristics in more detail, but clearly WebSphereMQ is a product that's designed to integrate many different environments. We have a scenario here, an example of how you may have a Kix COBOL application or web service running on Z, and you want to connect it to, for example, a Java web service running on Linux, or a .NET web services application running on Windows, and you want to do that in a way that's very flexible and very fast. And MQ is designed for those kind of scenarios and delivers qualities of service that can be really beneficial, particularly in extending the Z platform. Chart 12 looks at some of the comparisons or the advantages of WebSphereMQ as opposed to using perhaps the lowest common denominator, and that is to program in raw sockets or TCP/IP connections and have to handle many of the features that MQ has and rebuild those, reinvent the wheel, and create those yourself. And what the rest of this presentation does is looks at each of the rows of this table and examines the benefits so that you can see how WebSphereMQ provides you with these capabilities out of the box, and it doesn't involve you having to build them into your applications. So let's move on to slide 13 and look at WebSphereMQ and its role as a messaging backbone. Clearly, it's important that WebSphereMQ provides the ability for guaranteed once-only delivery of messages. And that's something that's a fundamental characteristic of MQ. When you're sending data from one system to another, you want a cast-iron guarantee that a message sent from one system to another system will definitely arrive. But also, you want to make sure that it will arrive as many times as you intended it to arrive. Think, for example, about a simple scenario where an application may be crediting and debiting an account as part of a withdrawal. If the application credits the account too many times, then obviously the person holding the account may be very happy, but the bank supplier obviously will not be happy. What you want to do is ensure that a message arrives exactly once, and we often call that once and once only delivery. So the message will definitely get there, but it won't be duplicated in transit, because often that results in IT systems becoming unreconciled. And remember, thinking back to an example of regulatory compliance, that would involve ensuring that our financial reports based off that data could be demonstrably accurate. Moving on to the next chart, this really talks about WebSphereMQ's breadth of support. Firstly, it's support for many different platforms and operating systems. Just a few of them are listed here, But in total, Webster MQ now spans up to 40 different platforms and over 80 platform configurations, so 80 different types of operating system, ranging from, obviously, ZOS through to Z-Linux, the OS 400 platform for the iSeries, Sun Solaris, Windows, HP UX, and many different other platforms and variants and types. But also, Webster MQ is able to support interfaces, a range of interfaces that match developer skills. So whether you're a developer who's using C or C++, there are interfaces available there. Whether you're using .NET C Sharp, Java JMS, RPG, or COBOL, any of those kind of languages, Webster MQ caters for a broad array of interfaces. And what that means is that you can use the skills that you already have in your IT shop to do this integration. It also means that whatever hardware you already have in your infrastructure, in your enterprise, whether that hardware is something you've acquired over time, or maybe you've acquired by merging with another company or acquiring another company, you now find you have a new set of IT systems that you need to merge, MQ will be able to connect to virtually any commercial IT system that you have. So that gives you the confidence to know that as you make investments in the future, those investments are safe because MQ will be able to cater for those hardware systems and those skills. Moving on to the next chart, this chart talks about a very powerful feature that Webster MQ delivers, and it's this idea of being able to connect things remotely without having to know where those remote connections are. So, for example, in this simple scenario here, we have two machines, machine 1 and 2, that are somehow integrated, but they're integrated here using Webster MQ. What that means is that a developer building an application, in this case, a developer's building application A, and he knows that it needs to connect to application Z on machine 2. What he doesn't know is where that application is going to be hosted and what the route across the network is from machine 1 to machine 2. And obviously, he really doesn't want to know that or need to know that information because he doesn't own application Z or machine 2. It could be redeployed, it could be moved, it could be changed. He has no control over that. And he wants to build a flexible infrastructure so that application A can always communicate with application Z, regardless of changes that take place. And this capability enables you to do that. What he's done is programmed application A to connect to MQ, and what it does is it puts information to a particular queue, and that queue is being used by application Z, and the queue delivers information to application Z. So it's a mechanism for indirectly communicating between apps. And so what happens is that when he sends a message from application A to the MQ service running on his machine, he simply tells it that the message is dispatched to Q2. That's all he says. Clearly, MQ knows that queue is not on machine 1. And so what it will do is take care of delivering that message from application A across the network to the other side of the network to machine 2 to put it onto the queue that application Z is accessing. What that means is if there are any changes made, if application Z moves to another place, is replaced with another application, application A can still communicate with it because it's a simple matter of reconfiguring Webster MQ rather than making difficult changes to application A. So what we're trying to do here is shield application developers from any changes that may happen in the infrastructure, ensuring that those applications don't need to be rewritten, recompiled, and redeployed. Clearly, this can save time, and it can save money as well. Moving to the next chart, this highlights some of the different delivery modes that Webster MQ provides. So unlike just the ability to connect two applications simultaneously, there are many different styles of messaging. The first of these is a fire-and-forget model, where simply one application wants to send a message to another application on another machine. And clearly, this is enabled with Webster MQ, and also it utilizes its assured guaranteed delivery we spoke about earlier, this once and once only guaranteed delivery. But in other situations, an application may want to send data, but also get some kind of response back. Maybe it's making a request. Maybe it wants to know that the message was consumed and processed by the receiving application. And this is often called a request-response-reply model, and it's particularly useful for web services, and we'll see later the role that MQ can play in web services scenarios. But suffice to say here, MQ also provides for this model, which can be very valuable. But also, Webster MQ provides what we call a publish and subscribe model. And this can be very, very powerful and very, very useful, particularly where there are high numbers of applications that need to receive a piece of data. And those applications tend to change over time. What we have here is an application, application P, and it's processing sales data. When it receives a message that says there is a new sale, that's kind of a flag or a topic relating to that message, what it can then do is it can send that message to MQ. MQ can look at that message, understand that there is a particular topic that relates to that message, and it has been configured to send that message on to certain applications, in this case application A, application B, and application Z. It hasn't been configured to send it to application C. Perhaps that application is not interested in sales data. Perhaps it's not authorized to receive that information. Nevertheless, the important point here is that WebSphere MQ is being used to distribute this new sale data to an application P and the community of applications that are interested in that message at any particular time. What that means is that application P does not know which applications are receiving the data because it's entrusted that to MQ. It also means that if the community of applications change, for example, application D comes along and is integrated into the solution and also needs to receive sales data, then all you have to do is reconfigure WebSphere MQ to send the information to D as well, rather than go into application P, make changes to the application, hard code into that application the location of application D and where it's located, and so on and so forth. So what you're doing is providing a very loosely coupled way of integrating these applications that is resistant to changes in your infrastructure. Let's move on and look at some other characteristics of WebSphere MQ. Chart 17 talks about how MQ is time flexible. And what we're really talking about here is the ability for it to provide what we call an asynchronous communication style. In other words, a communication style where both parties do not have to be available at the same time. Obviously, WebSphere MQ also provides for synchronous communication, that is, where both applications communicating are simultaneously available. And that may be useful in certain circumstances. But for the most part, what we're concerned about is not that the applications are both talking to one another simultaneously. We're really only concerned that the data is transferred from A to B. And what you can see in this diagram is a very simple situation where an application is trying to send data from one place to another. And at certain points, perhaps network failures occur, applications are busy, applications are not executing properly, applications crash, hardware fails, networks go down. Any of these things could occur. But between these two machines, because MQ is being used to queue, to store, and trusted to deliver that data, it will ensure that the information arrives, provided it's been placed onto MQ. MQ will log that data as there, will place it safely into a queue, and ensure that it is transmitted. And when it reaches the other end, it's available for application B as soon as application B comes back online, is restarted, restores its network connectivity, any of those scenarios. So you can see that this can really make a very flexible way of connecting applications that resists any problems that may occur during the transmission of data. This kind of networking is very complex to develop and very difficult to build, and certainly isn't provided by simultaneous connectivity mechanisms like sockets programming. It is provided out of the box with WebSphere MQ. Let's look at some of the other capabilities that WebSphere MQ offers. Not only is it able to deliver information with robustness, with guaranteed assurance of delivery, but it's also able to coordinate transactions and participate with resource managers. So we've got an example here of application one on a machine. It could be Windows, Linux, anything like that. It needs to send some information to machine two, to application B, and it needs that application to do some work. And part of that work involves updating a database. It inserts some data into a row in a database that also resides on that machine. Now that's clearly, this machine is intended to be a Z-series machine. And in this case, we're showing how DB2, as the resource manager, can coordinate a transaction on machine 2 using two-phase commit as a protocol to ensure that the operation of receiving the message on machine 2, processing the message, making the database update, and putting information back to send a reply to requesting application can all happen as one unit of work, as one single transaction that has all of the ACID properties that a transaction should have. What this means is that application A can be ensured that when it sends that message and gets the reply, that the transaction that it requested has completed, and that there wasn't a failure, it didn't try to insert the data in the database, and the table didn't exist, or the row didn't exist, or the database was full, any of those things. It can ensure that that transaction occurred locally and completed. What we're doing here is leveraging resource managers like Kix, IMS, DB2, Batch RSS, or the application server to enable that transaction coordination to happen. Moving on to the next chart, end-to-end transactionality. What we're really saying here is that many business processes involve multi-step transactions that occur distributed across the network on different machines. So we've got a simple example here of a travel agent making a booking. A booking comprises of three different parts: hiring a car, buying plane tickets, and booking a hotel. Each of those activities takes place on a different machine or a different application, for example, and results in a response being sent back to the travel agent to confirm that the booking has been made. Now, clearly, when the travel agent's making that booking, he may want that entire booking to be placed all at once and be completely confirmed before sending the reply back to show the customer that the booking has been completely made. You wouldn't want, of course, to hire the car and the hotel, but not the air flight, because how else would you get to your destination, to your accommodation? So because of its asynchronous messaging, because of its reliable capabilities to send data between those applications, WebSphere MQ can be used as the foundation, as the platform on which you can build this business process. And in many cases, you would want to take advantage of a process choreographer, of a process engine, such as that provided by WebSphere Process Server, to orchestrate the different parts of this particular business transaction. But the point here is that MQ enables those multiple threads to take place in an asynchronous way so that you can achieve at a high level this overall business transaction. And clearly within that transaction, the process choreographer would enable you to define compensation transactions that could work if other transactions failed. So, for example, if you were able to hire the car and the plane fare, but not the hotel, then before you return your response to the travel agent, you could unhire the car and cancel the plane tickets so that the entire transaction then was returned to its original state in the first place. So clearly this is a very powerful feature that MQ enables to enable you to build very robust business processes that can span the enterprise. Another important capability that WebSphere MQ provides is the ability to spread the workload of messaging between different hardware and different applications. What this can enable you to do is to obviously increase the throughput of processing data being passed between applications. By default, WebSphere MQ provides what we call affectionately a round-robin approach, as shown in this diagram. So when the application on machine one sends a request, it can send it over WebSphere MQ to a cluster of machines that are all configured to process those messages. Because there's a cluster of machines here connected over a network, this can give you higher scalability and higher throughput. With the round-robin approach to balancing, perhaps application 2 is served first, then application 3, then application 4, as each message passes through. But as you can see in the diagram, the developer here has coded their own algorithm to balance the incoming messages between those systems and applications, and that can be used as a workload exit to provide your own custom balancing. And in the latest release of MQ, we've provided additional balancing you can configure based on priorities assigned to applications and weightings applied to hardware. So by balancing the workload, this clustering capability enables you to improve the performance of your messaging backbone and enable more messaging engines to be added as you need. The next chart shows how this can apply very specifically to the ZOS platform. So in this example, we're taking advantage of IBM's parallel sysplex technology to increase the availability, the capacity, and the performance for messages. What we're trying to do here is enable a number of different queue managers access the same queue. So in this scenario, messages flow through into this shared queue that resides within the coupling facility. There are a number of machines and queue managers residing within a group that are able to extract messages from the same queue at the same time. This can result in very scalable throughput and obviously increases the ability to do load balancing. What's unique about this characteristic on ZOS is that that queue sharing group all access the same MQ objects, the same queues and messages at the same time. This can give a lot of advantages in terms of availability, because if a particular queue manager fails, another one can automatically access the same queue. Moving on to the next chart, we're looking here at the characteristics of MQ on ZOS that enable it to also have not only high throughput and performance, but high availability and failover. So in this scenario, you're concerned with what happens when an application or a hardware system or a network fails. Well, in this scenario, the failure recovery is automatic. And in fact, on ZOS, Web4MQ leverages the automatic restart manager, or the ARM system, so that it can be automatically restarted, and that it can continue to process once a failure has been resolved. Because messages are not being passed to queues that are assigned to each hardware system, there's less chance or no chance that messages can get marooned, in other words, delivered to a hardware system and reside there. Because of the use of the coupling facility, the messages are available for the next application to retrieve, to access, and to process. So in this example, machines 2 and 4 have experienced some kind of electrical fault and are no longer working, in which case machine 3 can carry on processing those messages, and another machine could be brought in and then could begin simultaneously accessing the messages in that shared queue. And because machines 2 and 4 weren't holding any messages, because they were all in that shared queue, none of those messages get lost or are stuck being processed by 2 and 4 in the meantime. Moving on to the next chart, another benefit of Web4MQ is the ability to provide a very consistent interface across all its platforms to applications that need to connect to it. This enables application developers to use just one API, the API of their choice, to integrate applications. And that means that they only need one set of skills to work across many different platforms and connect a number of different environments. Web4MQ supports its MQI interface, which is a de facto standard, but also the JMS interface, the Java Message Service, which has emerged as an industry standard for Java programmers. What you can see here is a mechanism whereby applications on ZOS are explicitly accessing either of those APIs to integrate with Web4MQ. What this also enables is non-ZOS applications to use the same API to connect to MQ and through MQ connect into resources on ZOS, for example, Kix or IMS. But on the next chart, we'll see that there is also built into Web4MQ bridges for Kix and also for IMS that enable you to access Web4MQ implicitly through those bridges. So in this case, the Kix program and the IMS programmer are able to use BMS or ISRT commands, native APIs, and those are implicitly bound to Web4MQ, so they can use the richness of those APIs and their own skills to integrate those applications on ZOS with other environments. So that can be very useful. And it's now possible, MQ version 6, to use multiple Kix bridges simultaneously. And that can increase the scalability of the solution. Moving on to the next chart, this discusses the important topic of security. Security is really one of the top concerns for CIOs whenever they're surveyed. And Web4MQ provides the ability to use the industry standard Secure Sockets Layer, or SSL, to secure the channels that MQ uses to connect applications. And this was introduced in version 5.3. On ZOS, it takes advantage of the ZOS cryptographic services system functionality. But also, Web4MQ integrates with the security server on ZOS, which was previously known as the RACF system. And not only does it integrate with RACF, but also third-party alternatives. And using security server, you can protect the resources that MQ owns, and you can ensure that those are not accessed by anyone who's not authorized. In addition, a bundled offering called Web4MQ Extended Security Edition for ZOS combines Web4MQ with Tivoli-based technologies that provide security not only at the channel level and at the queue level, but also right up to the message level and application level. so that you can increase the security of your solution. Another area that's of interest to many customers is the ability to move files around their organization. And many customers may be taking advantage of FTP technology or managed file transfer suites to move this data around. But often, that means running two separate networks, a network for message data or application data, and another redundant network for files as well. Well, WebSphere MQ provides the ability to consolidate both of those networks into one network. And it does that leveraging a technology from IBM business partner MetaStorm, using MetaStorm's offering, PM for Data, which IBM resells. This provides a message transfer layer that sits on top of WebSphere MQ and provides the ability to move files between applications and systems, both on distributed environments and also on ZOS. And in fact, like WebSphere MQ, PM for Data is developed on ZOS natively to leverage and exploit the capabilities of the SystemC platform. What it enables is not only the movement of massive files over the network using MQ, but also the ability to remotely track the movement of that file from end to end across the system. This clearly can help organizations that move large amounts of files and want to ensure and demonstrate that those files are not tampered with and that they have a complete audit trace of where those files have been. Incidentally, many performance trials, sending large files over the combination of PM for Data and MQ can actually exceed FTP and also simple drag-and-drop mechanisms between systems. So there are also performance benefits there for large files. Moving to the next chart, I touched on it earlier, but WebSphere MQ also has a role to play when connecting web services. Many developers today use Hypertext Transfer Protocol, the HTTP protocol, to connect web services. And this, of course, is the same protocol used between many web servers and web browsers. And if you've ever tried to connect to a website and the connection hasn't worked, the data hasn't been received properly, then you'll realize that whilst HTTP is a very useful and important protocol, it doesn't address all of the reliability and auditability and security concerns that you may have when applications are connecting. And unlike WebSphere MQ, it doesn't provide that asynchronous capability we looked at earlier that enables applications to communicate when the network is not available and when other applications are not available too. Well, WebSphere MQ provides the ability to move data being exchanged between web services in the form of SOAP packages over WebSphere MQ itself, so that you can actually leverage all the capabilities of WebSphere MQ by moving your SOAP data. And WebSphere MQ provides sender and listener support for the Access environment, also the .NET environment. So this can enable you to bring together many different web services together. Really, what it enables you to do is deliver on the promise of reliable web services today. And clearly, there are emerging standards in this space. But for those who actually want to implement reliable solutions today, WebSphere MQ can help you do that. So those are some of the benefits of using WebSphere MQ and some of the capabilities that it has specific to the ZOS platform that enable it to integrate many different applications and web services, to move files around, and to provide a very reliable and scalable and secure solution to moving data. Let's just look at the chart 28. It's some of the new features of the latest release of WebSphere MQ for ZOS, and that's version 6. In version 6, we were concerned with improving the integration that WebSphere MQ has with both Kix and IMS resources. We enhanced the bridges that we saw earlier that enable you to use native Kix APIs to integrate with MQ. And we provide the support for multiple Kix bridges to be used to improve the availability and the performance of those scenarios. We've also added some new commands to the IMS bridges to make those more flexible and easier to use. In addition, we were concerned with relieving some of the constraints that were in the prior release of WebSphere MQ for ZOS to make it easier to grow and scale your solution, especially without the need to set very static limits on things. So there was a focus here on making it easier to configure resources like page sets and buffers and buffer pools and log data sets so that they could adjust dynamically and in some cases preemptively to ensure that the buffers and the queues available to applications could respond to changing demands. Moving to the next chart, one of the things that we also introduced in the version 6 release is a new tooling and configuration environment. Now, this tooling environment is provided with WebSphere MQ version 6, that is, the distributed flavor of the product. However, this offering now works with MQ for ZOS. And what that means is that using this Eclipse console, which runs on Windows and Linux Intel machines, you can remotely connect to and configure your MQ messaging backbone across the board, across all the platforms. So you can remotely configure and connect into MQ deployed on the mainframe and make whichever configuration changes you're authorized to make. Now, this configuration tool uses secure the sockets layer to secure those remote configuration connections. And also, by providing this support, we've added PCF commands, PCF administration commands, to our ZOS product so that this tool uses just one set of commands to connect to the ZOS platform. It also means that if you're building administrative or monitoring commands yourself, you can use PCF commands to build applications that can be ported between distributed and ZOS environments. All of this is aimed at making it easier to visualize the entire messaging backbone that you have and make rapid and straightforward configuration changes. So what has been the result of WebSphere MQ? Well, on the next chart, this shows a sample of some of the clients that we have using WebSphere MQ today. Many organizations in a range of industries depend on WebSphere MQ to send vast amounts of message data and also business critical information, both sensitive data but also financial information. And you can see some of the statistics there emphasizing the scalability and the trust that organizations put in WebSphere MQ. You can also see an example of one customer that leveraged WebSphere MQ to respond to changes in regulations that they faced. And the ability to have a flexible infrastructure underpinning your IT systems is really the key to helping you meet your own regulatory compliance obligations. So moving on to the summary chart on chart 31, really what we've seen is that analyst studies indicate that by unburdening your applications of having all of the connectivity logic hardwired and interwoven into the applications can save you 2 to 4 times the costs, both in building the solution in the first place, but especially when it comes to maintaining the solution over time, when applications are likely to move and be changed, be redeployed. And this is particularly in contrast with solutions that you might build using raw sockets and by using FTP technologies. We've also seen how WebSphere MQ provides a messaging backbone, and that messaging backbone is a good first step to deploying an enterprise service bus as part of an SOA. WebSphere MQ also provides a foundation for your ESB, particularly in that it is the underpinning messaging for WebSphere Message Broker for ZOS, that it interoperates with WebSphere ESB, and it is also supported by the range of IBM Data Power appliances, which can form and complement your enterprise service bus. We've also seen how WebSphere MQ for ZOS goes much further to exploit the capabilities that the Systems Eve platform has, so that in particular it can integrate with your other assets on ZOS, but also to make it a very robust solution that's highly available and scalable and secure. So what might be the next steps on chart 32? Well, one next step might be to talk to your IBM representative or business partner about how you can address some of those challenges we looked at the start with WebSphere MQ for ZOS. There are links here to our product pages where you'll find useful information, and also our case studies can give you an idea of what other customers are doing, perhaps in your industry or your geography, by leveraging WebSphere MQ. Finally, on the next chart, I'd just like to extend a warm invitation to all of you to join us at this year's IBM Impact 2007 event, which will be held from May the 20th to the 25th in Florida. This consolidates a number of events, including the IBM Transaction and Messaging, or TNM, conference that's been running for many years now. And IBM Impact really will be the defining event in the IBM calendar for this spring. So thank you for joining me for this webcast today. I hope you found it useful, and I hope you've seen how Webs for MQ for ZOS can help you achieve some of the goals that you have and address the challenges that you face today. So now I'd like to hand back to the operator.
Thank you, Ben. Now we would like to ask you to participate in a brief electronic survey. Right after the survey, we will have a live Q&A session with the presenter. Your feedback is important to us, and we do appreciate the time you take to answer these questions. To participate, simply press the star key followed by the number that best corresponds to your choice. Please listen to all options before making your selection. Question 1. Please evaluate your level of satisfaction with today's teleconference. If it was high, press star 1. If it was medium, press star 2. If it was low, press star 3. And we'll pause for just a moment. Question 2. Was the level of technical information presented in this teleconference? If it was at a high rate level, press star 1. If it was not technical enough, press star 2. If it was more technical than I needed to hear, press star 3. And once again, we will pause for just a moment to assemble our responses. Question 3. How do you connect your Z applications today? If messaging with WebSphere MQ, press star 1. If another messaging product, press star 2. If sockets programming, press star 3. If FTP, press star 4. And if other, press star 5. Question 4. We hope you have enjoyed the teleconference today. Please let us know if you are interested in receiving additional information or follow-up regarding the products discussed today. If yes, press star 1. If no, press star 2. And that does conclude our survey. Thank you all for your participation. Now let's move to your questions. To ask your question, please press the star key followed by the digit 1 on your telephone at any time. And we'll pause for just a moment. At this time, I will turn the call over to Ben while we wait for questions. Mr. Mann, are you there? Once again, everyone, if you do have a question today, please press star 1 on your touchtone telephone, and we'll pause for just a moment. And at this time, there are no questions. Mr. Mann, I'll turn the conference back over to you for any additional or closing remarks.
Thank you. Hopefully you can hear me now. Obviously, if there are any questions, I can be contacted through my email address. Certainly like to hear from you, hear your comments about Webs for MQ for ZOS, and any ideas you have for how we can go further to provide you with integration solutions that meet your needs.
And that does conclude our conference for today. We do thank you for your participation, and have a great day.